Support for WPR comes from Viterbo University, dedicated to supporting teachers for over 130 years, with master's degree and licensure options online and regionally. Viterbo.edu/graduate. Support for WPR comes from the Dram Corporation, manufacturing professional-grade lawn and garden products since 1941, inventors of the 400 water breaker nozzle and the rain wand. DRAMM.com.
And now it's time for On Our Minds. This week we're celebrating William Shakespeare's legacy on the 450th anniversary of his birth. Shakespeare's contributions to the English language may not come as a surprise to many people, but the Bard's influence extends to areas you may not even have considered. Take, for instance, starlings or Lincoln's assassination. Stephen Marsh is the author of How Shakespeare Changed Everything, and he told me why he thinks Shakespeare is the most important figure in Western history.
What happened is that very quickly, as I began to research, I saw that his influence was really everywhere. I mean, it was in the sky, it was in politics, it was in the assassination of Lincoln, it was in our categories of sex, categories of race, thinking about things as fundamental as adolescence. The title seems crazy, you know, How Shakespeare Changed Everything, but in fact, I really didn't feel that there was any other title I could give it. You know, I did have some really quite lovely and nice priests write me and say, you know, I quite like your book, but Jesus was much more influential. And we had a sort of lively debate about it. But I guess to me, I don't see any evidence that Jesus actually had a big impact on the world, whereas Shakespeare, I find evidence for him pretty much everywhere.
Or at least in our daily lives.
Yeah, exactly. In everything, in the shoes we buy and, you know, in the birds in the sky.
Wow. Well, we should start simply by talking about language, because I know Shakespeare had a huge influence on the English language, and we all make constant Shakespearean quotations, I think, often without even realizing that we're quoting Shakespeare. But I didn't know until reading your book that Shakespeare was a kind of master coiner of words.
He was absolutely the master coiner of words. Virginia Woolf said he came out of the ocean of language dripping with new words. Nobody really knows where words originate. I mean, even contemporary words where we have good records. I mean, nobody knows who really came up with the first word computer, say. But Shakespeare is the first usage in the Oxford English Dictionary for 1,700 words, which is shocking. No other author in any other language, certainly not in English, comes anywhere close.
And 1,700. I'm just trying to wrap my mind.
1,700. It's mind-boggling.
Man practically created a language.
Well, I believe that the actual total number of words in Shakespeare is 36,000. So if you think about it, like 1,700 out of 36,000 words in his entire opus are new. So it's like a good portion of his language is actually new words.
What are some of them?
Well, it's things as ordinary as like eyeball, farmhouse. You know, he did things like he took foreign words and gave them their English forms, like bandito in Italian becomes bandit. Now, that may not seem very huge, but it's actually a major leap to go from bandito to bandit. Things as simple as gnarled, hobnob, gossip. I mean, alligator, academe, words like zany, kickshaw, words, you know, some fancy words like consanguineous. You know, this includes also words like where he took the word assassin and made it assassination. So he's the first usage of assassination. Advertising. I mean, words you would never think of. Like, he invented the word skim milk. The first usage of skim milk is in Shakespeare. I know. And advertising, too.
The point you make in your book is that Shakespeare's influence goes far beyond just language.
Mm-hmm.
You write about Shakespeare's influence on even nature, in that there's this remarkable thing you say that it's thanks to Shakespeare we have starlings in North America.
Yes, or well, one of his fans, more specifically, a man named Eugene Shiflin, who was a pharmaceutical manufacturer in the 1890s in New York. His plan was to introduce every bird mentioned in Shakespeare to the New World. And so what he did was, and he did a bunch of them, but the only one that stuck was the starlings. He brought them 60 pairs he imported from Europe, and he released them into Central Park. And now there are 200 million. In North America. They're incredibly devastating. They have a fruit costs more because of them. They're a real problem for orchard keepers. They've gone all the way from the Gulf of Mexico to the Arctic Circle. You know, literally, the prairies of North America would be full of bluebirds if not for a single line in Henry IV, Part One, which is the only place where starlings are mentioned. So he does have this incredible, you know, these chains of consequence that sort of radiate out of him. That, I mean, not that he could ever have imagined them, but they do sort of radiate out from his work in a totally unique way.
Mm. Sometimes in creepy ways. What was the, there's a connection between Abraham Lincoln's assassination and Shakespeare.
Yeah, I mean, it is one of those connections that seems impossible and yet is, you know, it, he just props up so prominently in the story. You know, John Wilkes Booth, he was an actor, and he was the son of Lucius Brutus Booth, who was the greatest actor of his generation in America. And he was the brother of Edwin Booth, who was the greatest actor of his generation and did the most, you know, the longest running Hamlet on Broadway up to that point and was a truly great actor. What happened was, you know, they could make a living performing as the Booth brothers, but they had to take different territories. So Edwin took the Northeast and John Wilkes took the South and the other brother took the West. And then because of that Southern affiliation, John Wilkes, you know, became this sort of Southern partisan. And about 6 months before he shot Lincoln, he starred in Julius Caesar. When he goes to assassinate Lincoln, it's very much modeled on the assassination of Julius Caesar. First of all, he shoots him in a theater. When he shoots him, he jumps on the stage after shooting him and shouts, "Sic semper tyrannis." He speaks in Latin, just as Julius Caesar at the moment of his death speaks in Latin. He explicitly calls on this version of republicanism that is heroically portrayed in the play. And when he's on the run from the feds after shooting Lincoln, he explicitly in his diaries, he says, you know, "I'm being hounded over hill and dale for doing what Brutus was honored for." So he very clearly had Brutus and that play very much in mind.
So it sounds like it was really a kind of Shakespearean assassination.
I mean, I say in the book that it was in a sense of an assassination written by Shakespeare. I mean, and there's other weird coincidences too. Like on the day before he was shot, Lincoln was going up the Potomac in a steamship with Charles Sumner, Senator Charles Sumner, and he was reciting passages from Macbeth as he was going up the river to his death. And Macbeth is the play where the word assassination is first coined. I mean, it's really...
This is bizarre.
You see, I know. Well, this is the thing. This is why the book is called How Shakespeare Changed Everything, because he keeps showing up in these incredibly weird ways.
Like a deus ex machina.
Yeah, it was just really like, oh my goodness, there he is again. You know, like a sort of Zelig figure in history. And I mean, even the book's been called Bardolatry in several ways. And obviously Shakespeare was a genius, but I mean, there are a lot of great writers out there. I mean, there's Dante and there's Joyce and but they don't show up in history in the same way. Not at all.
You also draw a line between Barack Obama and Shakespeare, specifically Shakespeare's play Othello.
Yeah, I mean, Othello has this amazing effect on American history. I mean, this was another thing that was just incredibly surprising to me. I mean, it's always been a very popular play. It was particularly a very popular play in antebellum South, where white actors would do it in sort of very light tones on, you know, the Bronze Age of Othello, as it was called. But then Paul Robeson, the great African-American actor, he was the sort of first person to do a black Othello by a black man, other than Ira Aldridge, who actually had to leave America to do it and did it in Europe quite successfully in the 1850s. But when Robeson does it, I mean, he says, "Othello has set me free."
In what way did Robeson think it had set him free then?
Well, he was able to create this space with Othello where he was a sort of, because there's no doubting that Othello is noble. There's no doubting that Othello is noble and also that his love for Desdemona, his love for this white woman is legitimate. And those two facts, a strong, eloquent black man and a black man legitimately sleeping with a white woman in 1940s America were so intense. Like they had such a profound reaction. I mean, he became the most popular Shakespeare actor on Broadway in history. It made him the most famous African-American in the world by a long measure, gave him unprecedented political heft. I mean, he managed to get sort of his choice for a communist counselor in Harlem elected. He was the first African-American to speak to Major League Baseball on the subject of desegregation. Robeson definitely paved the way for the social activism of the civil rights movement 20 years later.
Are you suggesting that some of Robeson's stature as a public figure came from his having played Othello and from the kind of legitimacy that the character of Othello gave him?
Absolutely. And it gave, and he used it to explicitly, you know, plead for his people.
So there's a way in which you can say that Shakespeare had something to do with the integration of American society.
Absolutely. Absolutely you can. I mean, I would say that Robeson was the prototype of figures like Martin Luther King and prototype of figures like Obama. I mean, these real, like, breaking down the doors of, you know, white America and forcing them to see eloquent, strong black men, you know. He and Othello gave him the means to do that. You know, I mean, obviously that's not the whole story, but, you know, it is a big part of that story. It's much like the assassination of Lincoln. You know, it's just Shakespeare shows up at these key moments with really surprising amount of power.
Stephen March is the author of How Shakespeare Changed Everything.